Today is a work session for an introduction of a committee bill, and Sue, if you don't mind giving us a summary of the bill, and then we'll take a motion and move on.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Legislative Concept 1139 directs the State Department of Energy in cooperation with the Oregon Department of Administrative Services to require that major public facility projects be planned, designed, constructed, and renovated to meet high-performance building standards for energy efficiency and environmental sustainability.
Thank you. I think all the committee members here have had a chance to take a look at it, so I'll take a motion.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we accept and print LC 1139 as a committee bill.
Senator Atkinson moves that it be adopted as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, so ordered. And I will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 186.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Pozanski.
I did forget just to say, I hope the bill on the even pages are just as good as the odd pages, since I have pages 1, 3, and 5 on the LC.
Now, you're giving those, I believe, on a need-to-know basis.
That's right.
You don't need to know.
You don't need and you don't know, Senator Pozanski. And
all right.
Thank you for that, Senator. Sue, if you don't mind, Senate Bill 186.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 186 directs the Land Conservation and Development Commission to adopt by goal or rule incentives for local government to designate industrial land reserves and to create and maintain an adequate supply of prime industrial lands.
Let me clarify, too. There are actually a number of people that wanted to testify on both 186 and 187. So my opening of this public hearing is for both bills simultaneously. When you come testify, if you want to comment on both, just make it clear for the record which you're commenting on at which time. So that'll be 186 and 187. And Sue, if you want to go through 187 for us.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 187 directs the Land Conservation and Development Commission to encourage local government to provide land dedicated to affordable housing. It authorizes the Commission to establish a process to expedite inclusion within the urban growth boundary of land dedicated to affordable housing. And for the record, we've received letters, two letters on both bills, from Joan Silver of the Dalles in opposition of both bills, and from Damian Siernick from Bend suggesting some language changes.
Thank you, Sue. And I'll call you up two at a time, starting with Lane Shetterly and Bob Repine, two former esteemed members of the institution here. And you're both, yes. And it isn't for social reasons, but I'm going to step out of the room for just a minute when you get started and leave Senator Atkinson in charge. We'll be back shortly.
Hello, Lane, Director.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mr. Vice Chair, Senator Atkinson. Good to see you. It's my pleasure to introduce, I guess, both Senate Bill 186 and 187. What I think I may do is just start with 186, since I think that's what Director Repine is here to speak on, and then go into 187. After that, briefly just a rundown of how this bill came to be before you today. These two bills are advanced by the Land Conservation Development Commission through the governor's office. About a year ago, we began a process of developing legislative concepts for the 2007 legislative session that involved outreach to stakeholders and staff, local governments, and others that might have proposals for legislative concepts. We bring those, we winnow those at the department level, we bring them to the commission for consideration. The commission made an early approval of these concepts in March of last year. We developed language and brought them back to the commission, I believe, in the fall for formal approval. The commission gave formal approval. After that, they're advanced to the governor's office, where they are reviewed by the governor's staff, and they're then only when they have survived that level of further review are they advanced as agency bills. And so that is how these come to be before you today. Senate Bill 186 addresses industrial land needs in the state. It recognizes the priority that we give to large site industrial land need in order to accommodate particular industrial development. It authorizes, and I want to emphasize authorizes, but is not intended to require local governments to identify large potential industrial sites that are adjacent to urban growth boundaries, to designate those as industrial reserves. It provides for site characteristics of the land that would be eligible for industrial reserves. It makes the land within those characteristics high priority for inclusion in urban reserves. That is a process of designation that is already available under law to cities to designate land to be brought into an urban growth boundary. It is intended to streamline and remove constraints to developing industrial uses on these industrial reserve sites so that they are good to go. And further, then intended to expedite the process for bringing those into an urban growth boundary in a short-term time frame. We're talking in a matter we hope to be able to accomplish this within a six-month to at the most two-year time frame for local government to bring these into an urban growth boundary. And it is intended also to ensure that the land that is dedicated to industrial reserves remain zoned for industrial, that it may not be converted to other uses and then shopped for commercial or residential. That is an overview of the bill. When Director Repine is done, perhaps with his testimony, I would bring up Bob Rindy. Bob is more conversant in the technical aspects of the bill, but I do want to emphasize, bring to you the general description of it, and I also would note that as your staff, as Ms. Marshall mentioned, this bill directs LCDC to engage in rulemaking, and in that process we would bring additional stakeholders in for further clarification and definition as we put the meat on the bones of this bill. I would also acknowledge that this bill is not perfect in its form in front of you. I've emphasized in my testimony that the intent to this of this would be that the bill would provide for a authority to local governments. It is not a mandate to local governments. It does not require inclusion of any number of sites. It is intended to be a tool available to local governments that have these industrial reserve sites in proximity to their urban growth boundaries to be able to designate them, to reserve them for industrial development, and then to bring them in an expedited basis when an opportunity presents itself for industrial expansion. That, in a nutshell, Mr. Chair, again, we'll bring Bob Repine up when Mr. Repine is done. And then we'll be interested in hearing the conversation. I think there are supporters here. There are folks who express concerns about it. We want to be sensitive to those concerns, and we'll be pleased to work with the committee and stakeholders to refine this according to your direction and as best that we can with the folks that have opinions to express about it today.
Thank you. Is there any questions for Director Shetterly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes.
Yeah, I got questions, but maybe Mr. Repine could answer them before I ask them.
And
with your pleasure, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Okay, for the record, I am Bob Repine. I'm Director of Economic and Community Development. I think Director Shetterly has done an appropriate job and an effective job of describing what the intent of the bill was. I've given you at one-page talking points how I see the bill playing out in regards to the work and activity of the agency participates on. But what I wanted to do is just really share to you, as we work in the state of Oregon with all of our community partners, trying to both identify and advance industrial sites, particularly with our new certified site program that we've had in place for a couple of years now, we have found that in some cases there is a lack of or a total absence of what we call developable industrial lands. I think Director Shirley mentioned indirectly described that in the past when lands might have been identified as industrial purposes, they were used for other purposes. And so we, through a process of zoning and decision-making, we've somewhat given away some of our industrial lands. And so in many communities, we have the need and the necessity to re-identify those industrial lands. I'm also very aware and understanding of the implication of these type of lands that would be generally looked at would also have some agricultural implications. And if you've never been on a road trip with Director Koba, as Director Shirley and I have been, when you go down the road and we look at things from one perspective, and she always taps us on the shoulder and says, the land you're looking at, remember, is prime ag. And I think what we need to do is figure out how do we allow Oregon to be prosperous and develop its economic opportunities through identifying industrial lands, appropriate industrial lands, but also be as sensitive to the agricultural commodities and the lands around it. We need to be successful in both ends. I, as the economic director, work with the agricultural community on a regular basis and trying to advance their causes. But at the same time, I have to make the opportunities available for other future locations for industrial facilities. So in that spirit, I agree with Director Shutterly. I think that hearing what the proponents have to talk about the bill and learning from that would be very advantageous for all of us, so we can maybe find that compromise where we can have a little bit of both. So it gives some certainty opportunities for industrial development. It clearly gives the cities and the community a better roadmap on how infrastructure will be addressed in those areas, as opposed to just creating infrastructure and hoping that lands will, the proper zoning will follow. It would be much more appropriate to have it more strategically thought out when you think about your infrastructure for those developments. So, again, for the lands that we're trying to develop for economic opportunities for the state of Oregon, for the continuation of the certified site program, of which we have 48 on our certified sites today and more coming on this month, we see that this bill gives us that opportunity and not a more of a permissive process with these communities to, if they choose, they can follow this process and procedure to help advance industrial lands and that inventory of that those urban lands into a rural reserve. And so for that those reasons, we would be very supportive of this piece of legislation.
Okay. Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the face of ballot measure 37, the big look going on, questions about inclusion and affordable housing that we have a bill possibly coming forward from the House on, we have a lot going on right now in planning. I haven't heard from my local community, the cities and counties that are affected locally on these issues. I've got an open mind, but I also have a little bit of concern about what this means in the face of those things. I'd like to hear a little more about what you think would be effect on the big look, how it affects 37 claims, if at all. Why are we thinking about affordable housing on the border of a city instead of inside the city where we probably have a greater need? And I'd very much like to hear what Senator Brzozowski thinks, because his committee is working so hard on these similar issues, too. And I would look to him for some guides on this. So kind of a comment on those issues as we look at these?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bates, those are all good concerns. I would say, first of all, on the Measure 37 front, it would be hard to calibrate the impact or the relationship of this bill with Measure 37. For one thing, there's a lot of uncertainty around Measure 37, as you know, right now. And so I really don't have a good answer for you other than to say that this bill advances the traditional growth management concepts that are built into the program of bringing in lands to the urban growth boundary and not locating them out in rural lands, for instance. Where Measure 37 complicates that is the same way it complicates just about any other urban growth boundary decision now, and that is where you have pockets of Measure 37 claims on the periphery of an urban growth boundary that may, if those claims go forward, render that land unable to be urbanized or brought in for that use. To that extent, Measure 37 would conflict with this just by taking lands off the table that might otherwise be qualified for this industrial reserve. Otherwise, I don't see a huge connection between those, and again, it's speculative at this point just what kind of impact we're going to see from Measure 37. As far as the big look is concerned, that's another good question. I would address it in a couple of parts. Number one, this really addresses a rule that is already in place regarding urban reserves. So it doesn't create, in that sense, a new element to the program. It identifies a particular type of reserve as industrial reserve, but otherwise the concept of urban reserve is already well embedded into the planning program. And so this, we think, and I think I speak for the commission, and John Van Landingham, chair of LCDC, is here with us as well. I think I speak for the department and the commission that we think this is incremental enough that it doesn't change the ground rules under which the Big Look Task Force is working, neither does it prejudice the outcome of their work. We have presented this legislation to the Big Look, so they're aware that these bills are going forward. We didn't ask for an endorsement, but to my knowledge, there was no pushback from them either as representing an encroachment into their work. So that's probably the best answer I can give you on generally. You asked about Senate Bill 187, which was the housing bill. And we haven't gotten to the overview on that, but since it's a question you raised, if I may, I'll just go ahead and answer that. And that is Senate Bill 187, dealing with affordable housing, has an element to it that Senate Bill 186, the industrial lands, does not, in that it would allow a city to designate land within the existing urban growth boundary as qualifying for affordable housing, which then would basically trade that acreage off against the 20-year land supply to provide for an additional housing need for the city to be brought in. But otherwise, that gives cities some flexibility if they have a willing property owner to designate land inside the urban growth boundary for this affordable housing strategy. Also, I would mention that even at that, on the edge of an urban growth boundary, doesn't always mean out in the country where you have cities, that, especially in your area, where the edge of one UGB may be the gateway to the next city. And so it's entirely feasible that even on the edge of a UGB, there may be places that are appropriate. But we've intentionally tried to add some flexibility into that locational issue for this affordable housing land in Senate Bill 187, particularly to address that concern.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Beyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Shetterly, I guess and then you said you're looking for input, and I appreciate that, but you also used the term, I got to put a little meat on the bones when you get to rule, and one of my concerns is we've gotten somewhat to the place we are in land use in Oregon because we have given the department discretion over the last 30 years to put the meat on the bones instead of doing it in front of the legislature. So when you talk about in number sub 3, lines 7 and 8 on page 2 of the bill, requirements, incentives, and other measures intended to encourage local governments, do you have any idea what you mean by those phrases?
Sure. In general terms, Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, that would be the streamlining of the process to bring those lands into the urban growth boundary. For instance, that would be one incentive that if you designate this as industrial reserve, then you would have a fast track to bring that into your urban growth boundary so that if you have this proverbial bird in the hand, the knock on the door that says we'd like to locate, if you can provide some land available to us for industrial development. One thing that we could do to create an incentive to use this process would be to streamline the inclusion of that land within the urban growth boundary. I think that would be well received by cities, for instance. That would be one thing.
Okay. I guess on a follow-up to that, the question is, can you do that without statutory change, keeping people from appealing to LUBA or Court of Appeals or other places, or would you need statutory authority to do that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I think that given that's one of the reasons we have this bill in front of you, is to get the legislative directive to do those kinds of things so that we have the support of direct legislation to implement those kinds of incentives.
Okay. Further question, Mr. Chair, and I'm going to move down the page on under 4C. And I read this, and maybe I'm reading it wrong, as being a directive more to cities than counties, and that when you're talking about the not allowing the land to be rezoned, yet this is land that is outside of a UGB, and the cities are not zoning that now, are they? And if so, I would think the counties are zoning if it's outside of a UGB, but this is saying the land cannot be rezoned while it's outside. So you're directing the city to do something the counties do, aren't you?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I think I'd rather have Bob Rindy take that one. That's getting a little bit more technical than I want to wade into, but to say that I think these are typically under joint jurisdiction of city and county in an industrial, in a reserve. Once it's been designated, so that you don't have the county doing some land use action that's inconsistent with the city's designation as industrial reserve. That's part of the process of bringing it in as industrial reserve.
I guess I'm not clear enough. I guess it seems like if it's still outside the UGB, but next to the UGB, again, maybe this bill does that, but it seems to me that's still county land until it gets brought into the UGB, when the cities then have control of it. And maybe someplace in this legislation that I'm not, you know, familiar enough with the land use laws to know how that works, but I think the guy sitting there probably is now.
Bob Rindy with the department. Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, 4C, what you're looking at is actually intended to mean that the land would retain its existing zoning until it's included in an urban growth boundary. That existing zoning is under any land that's put in an urban reserve is generally farm zoning. It could be forest zoning, of course, and it could be something else. But whatever it is that's in we're talking about sites that are outside of an urban growth boundary, adjacent to an urban growth boundary, generally today they're zoned EFU or forest land or something else that's a rural zoning. The intent of this bill is that that would be designated as industrial reserve, but would retain that farm zoning and all the tax breaks and other things that happen, and would be farmed until and such time as it is ultimately brought into an urban growth boundary. At that time, under the purposes of this bill, it would be zoned as prime industrial. So it is a two-step process that we're establishing here. We're looking out beyond 20 years. We're looking out further. It could be quicker than that somebody comes knocking on the door, as Mr. Shetterly said, but the purpose here is to earmark it for industrial and authorize cities to take and counties to take the steps that might ultimately bring that into a boundary when it's ready for industrial. But until such time, it would retain its current county zoning.
But, Mr. Chair, I guess that's where I'm confused, because you're telling the city to identify, and I assume you're telling the city to identify that as industrial reserve land, and the city is doing that, yet the county, the counties don't have to follow what the cities decide the land's going to be, I don't think. Maybe they do. And I don't see where this tells them that they have to, that if a city says, we want this 40 acres to be industrial reserve, Where is the language in here, or where is the language in statute, I guess, if it's not in here, that tells the county, once the city has labeled that land industrial reserve, you can't change it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, the language in sub 4 is not meant to be just for cities. It's for local governments and always urban reserves, and this is a subcategory of urban reserves. And urban growth boundaries are done in coordination with cities and counties, and right. Neither one by themselves, neither a city or a county by itself, can amend an urban growth boundary or designate the reserves. So if we need to clarify that language, we'd be it's one of those things that we'd be happy to do so as we go forward, if this bill moves forward with legislative council. But the intent here is cities and counties in coordination identify industrial reserves. That's held in as industrial reserve until at such times it comes into the urban growth boundary. At that time, whether it's the city or the county, it would be zoned prime industrial, but not until then.
I guess one last thing, is there a process if the cities and counties don't agree that they work that out somehow, or like in the case, I'm trying to think of a city that might straddle Salem, for instance, is actually in two different counties. What if Salem says, we want our industrial reserve to be in South Salem in Marion County, and Polk County says, no, we want your industrial reserve to be in northwest Salem in Polk County. Is there a process that these cities and counties work that out?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, in case of Salem, which is probably the only one in the state, a good example or a bad example, the Salem urban growth boundary can only be changed by concurrence of both counties and both cities.
Okay.
But in most cases, right. In fact, in probably every other case except Eugene Springfield or the metro boundary, you have generally one city and one county, and they have to reach agreement on their urban growth boundary. Neither one of them can proceed unilaterally to changing that boundary.
That's correct. Okay, good. Thank you. I appreciate you both, the directors, testifying today. I think Mr. Rindy was an asset to you and earned his money well. You might want to keep him close every time you come up. But, no, thank you all three for your testimony. And was there one other thing you wanted to close with?
No, you'd opened on 187 as well, the housing. Did you want to talk about that now, or did you want to take testimony on 186 first?
Well, I assumed when I stepped out as you were going through your initial that you probably hit both very quickly. Was I wrong about that?
I didn't do the walkthrough of 187. I can do that.
Do me a favor. Go ahead and do it now, and do it relatively quickly, just because I want to make sure that everybody has a chance to testify
today.
Thank
you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 187.
We might want to bring John.
May I be excused, Mr. Chairman?
Absolutely.
Senate Bill 187 has a flavor that's similar to Senate Bill 186. Senate Bill 186 addresses industrial land needs. Senate Bill 187 addresses affordable housing needs, but from a little bit different perspective. Again, it provides rulemaking authority, in fact, a direction to the department, and it provides authority to local governments to plan and zone new sites that are to be dedicated to affordable housing. In the years that I've now almost 3 years been with the department, a consistent theme that we have heard is the shortage of affordable housing statewide. It's on the coast, it's in central, it's in eastern, it's up and down the valley and in the far southern part of the state. I have indicated in my testimony too that we believe that that is a multifaceted issue, and I'm not one that subscribes to the notion that the land use program is chiefly responsible for the shortage we have in the state of affordable housing. I think it is multifaceted. There are lots of causes and elements that play into that. To the extent that that we can provide some relief from that, we have identified this through Senate Bill 187. What it does, it's not an urban reserve bill, but it authorizes cities to amend the urban growth boundaries or to rezone land already inside the urban growth boundary in order to provide new sites for affordable housing. And like the urban reserve bill, the industrial reserve bill, it provides that sites that are dedicated to affordable housing may not be rezoned or redeveloped for other uses other than affordable housing. And it also, like the industrial reserve bill, does streamline the UGB requirements in order to encourage local governments to use this tool to add affordable housing sites that are capable of being served by transportation, sewer, water, and other public facilities that are necessary for the development of affordable housing. It also provides that the term sites dedicated to affordable housing would be defined taking into consideration regional factors, ownership and rental housing needs, government-assisted housing, the need to accommodate those displaced by mobile home park closures, which is a big issue in this state, and other factors that would come into play in designating this. Also, it provides, as I mentioned in response to Senator Bates's question, for a relaxation of current statutes to prevent local governments from regulating housing affordability. I guess we didn't get into that over the long term. Currently, there's a statewide preemption, for instance, on price controls in housing. This bill, because it anticipates a voluntary agreement between a local government and a property owner, anticipates that through this process, the property owner could agree and the city would then be able to implement some of these kinds of price controls and other tools designed to maintain this land as available for affordable housing for the long term. I also mentioned this is in response to Senator Bates's question, where a city chooses, for instance, to designate land already within its urban growth boundary as target land for this affordable housing development. To the extent that land is then identified and brought into the restrictions for affordable housing, it provides relaxation for the 20-year land supply to allow the city to recapture the equivalent land in an urban growth boundary expansion for something other than affordable housing. That's a quick run through. Mr. Van Landingham is here, and he, in fact, is our resident commissioner with expertise in affordable housing and may have a couple of additional comments for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John Van Landingham. I'm the chair of the Land Conservation and Development Commission. It's too long. I have been for about 3 years. I've been on the commission about 7 years. I wouldn't say this is my idea. I'd say it's Al Johnson's idea, frankly, a land use lawyer formerly from Eugene, now in Portland, and we stole it from him. And let me give you an example to bring it home. Let's say you're in the city of Bend, and you have a number of manufactured home parks. A lot of us in the affordable housing world think that in a certain number of short number of years there will be no manufactured home parks in Bend because all of that land will be converted to higher end residential uses. I was just met with Senator Bakken a little bit ago, and he made a similar projection for Washington County, and I don't disagree. I believe that this is one of the few ways that we will ever see a new manufactured home park in a community in Oregon, because it's one of the few ways to get cheap land. Any land that's brought into an urban growth boundary, because of the limited supply, is automatically going to be very expensive. It's hard to build affordable housing with expensive land. Going back to Bend, Deschutes County has some land adjacent to its UGB. Bend is interested in building a new manufactured home park, not itself probably, but through a nonprofit. This is a way that Bend could bring that land in, limit it to that use, and have that happen. The bill calls out manufactured housing parks as a use for this concept. This is voluntary inclusionary zoning. Lane Chatterley mentioned there is currently a statutory preemption on mandatory inclusionary zoning in which you say to a developer, yeah, you can develop the subdivision, but 10% of the units have to be affordable. That's now preempted by state law. Home builders would be very concerned if that were to change. Home builders would support, I believe, a voluntary inclusionary zoning concept in which you say to someone, yes, you can bring in this amount of land, but some portion of that has to be committed to affordable housing, whether it's a new manufactured home park, apartments, home ownership program, whatever. Thank you.
Committee? Bill? Mr. Director, thank you very much.
Thank you. And as with the other bill, Mr. Chair, we are interested in hearing the comments and testimony on this, and we'll continue to work with you and the committee and other interested stakeholders on refining this as we may need to.
Good.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, may I add one more thing in response to the question earlier from Senator Bates about affordable housing at the edge of the boundary, and just remind the committee that many people today that are in urban areas looking for affordable housing tend to find that in distant communities. If you're in Salem, you want to find affordable housing, you're going to go look in Almsville or up in Mill City. And that happens all over the state. So keep in mind, because I know I've heard a number of times from different people about concern about putting affordable housing at the edge of the boundary. That's going to be far closer to the urban area than the way that than occurs today with people commuting long distance in order to find that housing.
If I could add, that's sort of the history of mobile home parks. They were built on the fringes because that's where the cheap land was. Those communities have grown to where those parks are now, and that's why they're converting.
And I would add, and you don't need to comment, that that's one of the concerns about putting them out on the fringe of the urban growth boundary now is that it then necessarily pushes that development potentially outside the urban growth boundary. But thank you very much for your comments. Art Schlack and Don Schellenberg. And as they're coming up, a couple notes. One, for folks that are testifying, we still have a very long list. If you can keep your comments to 3 or 4 minutes tops, that'll be helpful in getting everybody through. And for the committee, just a reminder that in this committee, you don't need permission from the chair. If you've got a line of questioning that you want to go ahead and pursue, then feel free to do it. Just also be as brief as possible so we can get everybody through. Mr. Slack?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Art Slack with the Association of Oregon Counties. Where to start at this point? I think most of the comments that I was going to make were made by Senator Bates at the beginning.
Hey, Mr. Schellenberg.
I appreciate that, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Go right ahead, then.
But let me just make a couple quick comments. I do have a concern with respect to the big look, and I believe both these bills are major policy considerations, which I believe are out of sequence with the big look and the work that's going on with respect to that. Would also mention that last year we experienced rulemaking with the department and the commission in Goal 9. That, and I was on the Goal 9 work group. That work took a year or more. It was, very intensive. I would not say that I came away from that extremely satisfied. And I think that the fiscal impacts of that work is yet to be addressed by the department as well as probably this year by the legislature, because we will be asking for additional grants to undertake the mandatory work of that rulemaking. I think I would submit to you that the time of the legislature and the time of the department would be better spent in addressing the deficiency in infrastructure that exists inside the UGB and providing service to sites that are currently planned and zoned for industrial use and affordable housing or housing. We know that a lot of sites are not developed because there is a lack of sewer, water, and roads. And if we don't get on top of these issues, all we'll be doing is going out to the easy areas on the fringe, and we'll always have this land inside that is not developed. Last, Mr. Chair, would submit to you that, and it was mentioned, Measure 37. Measure 37 currently is consuming the planning resources of counties, both the staffing resources and the fiscal resources of counties are being consumed, and I think now is not a good time to start another major planning exercise. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Mr. Schellenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Don Schellenberg, Associate Director of Government Affairs with the Oregon Farm Bureau. My statement today will be in opposition to Senate Bills 186 and 187. Senate Bill 186 and 187 enact provisions that would establish a 20-year land supply requirement for prime industrial and affordable housing. And as I read it, those designations would be in addition to existing 20-year supply requirements for residential and employment lands, which already includes industrial land. Are these uses not already subsets of residential and employment lands for which a 20-year supply is already required by state law? Where are the requirements for a 20-year land supply of agricultural lands and a rural reserve for prime agricultural lands? The bills also provide an expedited or supersiding process for the creation of reserves. Why is this needed? It is our opinion it is already too easy to convert agricultural lands to urban or future urban lands. Consider the following provisions of state law that can lead to the conversion of agricultural lands to urban land uses. RS 197, 296, sub 2. This provision in state law requires a local government to demonstrate that its plan provides sufficient buildable lands within its urban growth boundary to accommodate estimated housing needs for 20 years. And then you have the OAR that implements that. ORS 197, 298, sub 3 allows for lower priority lands, the higher quality agricultural lands, to be included in the urban growth boundary if it's determined by the local government that non-resource and poorer quality resource lands are inadequate to accommodate the amount of land needed to meet the determined 20-year land supply. The law further provides three specific reasons that may justify conversion of higher quality resource lands. Specific types of identified land cannot reasonably be accommodated on non-resource and poor quality resource lands. Future urban services cannot reasonably be provided due to topographical or other physical constraints. Maximum efficiency of land uses within a proposed UGB requires the inclusion of higher quality resource lands in order to include or provide services to other lands within high priority for inclusion. These are all ways that you can already convert land. And then statewide planning goal 14 requires that UGB shall be consistent with the 20-year population needs. And I'll not go into any more detail, but then you have the OAR that implements goal 14. Well, we've got plenty of law already that provides for a lot of this. The above provisions provide a path to urbanize agricultural lands regardless of soil type, quality, value, or rank. None of these provisions provide any bottom line or ultimate protection for any category of agricultural land. And these provisions have been utilized in actual practice. Recent successful examples include the expansion of the UGB of Woodburn, 775 acres, McMinnville, 794 acres, and Metro Industrial Lands, 402 acres. The long-term record of urban growth boundary expansion in the state are evidence that the additional provisions are not needed. According to data available from the Oregon Department of Land Conservation and Development from 1987 to 2005, 14,840 acres of agriculture-zoned land was moved into the urban growth boundary by way of urban growth boundary expansions. That's 33% of all the land that was added to urban growth boundaries during that time. These policies and laws have led some in the agriculture industry to coin the term the rural urban growth boundary. This focuses on the potential for different cities, UGBs, to ultimately coalesce. Unlike other land uses, there are no policies or provisions addressing the long-term protection of agricultural lands from urbanization. Senate Bill 186, in effect, promotes the conversion of one traded sector industry for another. 80% of Oregon agriculture production leaves the state, and 40% of the Oregon agriculture production is exported offshore. It is important to remember that agriculture production is location-dependent. You have to be where the right kind of soil is. Industrial uses may be geographical-dependent, but they are not soil-dependent. Finally, both bills would require that once designated, these reserves would require protection from conversion to another use. I think that's a good idea. We would support the concept of protection in the UGB of all those uses. Whatever they're zoned for, they ought to be protected for that and not converted to something else. Once designated for industrial use or affordable housing, conversion protection is a good idea. But the question remains, where is any conversion protection for agricultural land? Oregon needs to be protecting its high-value farmland, not finding a way to convert it to another use. Agriculture is, simply put, the traded sector production factory without walls. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I hope you're not proposing a new one for a reserve for the family farm, even though it may be necessary. We've got... I'm actually very glad you gave the testimony you did, because it is one of the missing pieces in all the various reserves we have before this committee now, is the encroachment of the urban growth boundary and other reserves onto the family farm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you, thank both you. Of you. Peggy Lynch and Glenn Gross. Mr. Gross, why don't you go ahead?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, thank you for allowing us to testify today. I'm Glenn Gross. I'm the Urban Planning Administrator for the City of Salem. I'm testifying in opposition to both Senate Bill 186 and 187 today. I'd like to start with 186. When it comes to planning for industrial development, the City of Salem has one of the most successful planning programs in the state of Oregon. The best evidence of that is our city's new Milk Creek Industrial Park, a 600-acre site on Salem's east side near Highway 22. It's a joint venture with the state of Oregon, and at build-out, we expect it to bring some 5,000 jobs to our region's economy. I mention this to show that local planning for industrial development is being done, and it's being done well. And it's not just in Salem, but other local cities in the state as well. It's a high priority, not just for the state, but for us in local government. That is why the City of Salem views Senate Bill 186 with mixed feelings. On the one hand, we certainly support the bill's objective of strong local planning for industrial development and economic growth. But on the other hand, we doubt that additional state requirements are the best means to achieve that objective. In fact, we are concerned that such requirements may slow our progress. It is because of such doubts that we cannot support this well-intentioned bill. I'd like to point out that the bill's criteria for identifying, quote, prime industrial land, good access, the absence of constraints, et cetera, would apply to much vacant land that is prime for any kind of use. This bill might force the city to zone prime industrial lands that a city regards as more suited to other types of uses. The basic idea of this bill, to improve Oregon's supply of industrial lands, is sound, but because of the ambiguous wording, the overly prescriptive provisions, and the deferring of crucial details to later rulemaking creates a potential for serious problems. In light of these concerns, we cannot support the bill as it is now written. Would you like me to talk about 187 now? Or? The City of Salem supports the need for affordable housing, obviously. However, we are concerned about the current wording of this particular draft. To us, it would tend to encourage pockets of affordable housing. We think it's more appropriate to incorporate that kind of housing throughout a community. We are concerned that this bill, as well as Senate Bill 186, allows expansion of a urban growth boundary for a specific purpose. We are concerned about this trend. We are concerned that it might jeopardize sound land use planning process. We think a UGB expansion needs to be done with a comprehensive look at all of the issues, when and where a UGB expansion should occur, not just for a single purpose. We are concerned about this, especially in light of the Big Look process that's ongoing. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Gross. Ms. Lynch?
Peggy Lynch for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League of Women Voters of Oregon is a grassroots, nonpartisan political organization that encourages the informed and active participation of citizens in government in order to build better communities statewide. The League has long been a supporter of the Oregon Statewide Land Use Planning Program and its 19 goals. So on 186, Industrial Reserves, the League believes in complete communities, and jobs are certainly an element of that community's of a community's success. But we are opposed to 186. We have watched the progress towards shovel-ready industrial sites that you heard about earlier. We have participated related to the amendments of Goal 9, the economy, in adopting rules to more clearly provide mechanisms for local governments to assure they can address their need for industrial land. The LCD has even created a guidebook to help people do that. You've heard Metro and more recently Woodburn adopt UGB expansions directly related to industrial lands. So we believe that this proposal is premature for three reasons, and you have heard them. You've heard from Mr. Schlack about the burden of county governments related to staffing and Measure 37 issues. The other issue I can share with you is that LCDC has seen progress on developing what are called safe harbors, which are tools related to Goal 14 for UGB expansions that local governments can use to ease the burden of UGB expansion proposals. That project is supposed to be continuing this next session or this next biennium. We don't need to ask them to do additional work when this kind of work needs public intensive opportunities to participate in doing this. And speaking of that, LCDC has a public involvement policy. And so there is some degree of action and opportunity for people. But the truth is most of rulemaking happens in work groups. We heard Senator Byer's concern about rulemaking issues. And it is a concern for this large an issue to happen in a rulemaking process. If you amend goals, there is a state statute that says you have to go out and have 10 public hearings around the state. To amend rules, that is not true in our land use program. And this is a substantial set of rules. And then lastly, we heard Senator Bake's concern and certainly the rest of his concerns related to the Big Look and the Task Force on Land Use Planning. That's an opportunity to have a public conversation with all Oregonians about how to restructure our land use planning program. So we do not support 186. 187, I will try to just hit those specific points, but certainly some of the main things are true with 187 as with 186. First of all, the League is ecstatic that LCDC is talking about Goal 10 affordable housing, and we are really pleased that affordable housing is rising to the level that it needs to in Oregon. But again, we believe this is not the answer at this time. We support the Housing Alliance, and I bet you've all talked to people today about the Housing Alliance's agenda, and we certainly believe that affordable housing is a part of complete communities that needs to happen. I've talked to you about Goal 14, we've talked about Measure 37 and rulemaking. Expanding the UGB is a controversial approach to seeking housing for citizens who often need public transit and other urban amenities. And having the use of a tool such as inclusionary zoning, which says that in our communities we must have all members of our communities, is exactly the kind of thing we need to have. So we hope that you look at land use issues that help make that. 187 does not address the need for more schools, police, fire, libraries, parks, roads, and other services. And then the issue applies also related to the Big Look. Thank you for your time.
Good. Thank you very much, both of you. Mary Crown McCurdy and Tony Holt.
Good afternoon, Chair Vaki and members of the committee. My name is Mary Kyle McCurdy, staff attorney with 1000 Friends of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on both bills at the same time. I'll give a little background on 1000 Friends, and then I'll address each in succession. 1000 Friends served on LCDC's Economic Development Plan and Advisory Committee, as well as the Governor's Task Force on Industrial Lands Conversion. We've also been advocates for and litigated on behalf of affordable housing since the inception of our organization over 30 years ago, and we're a member of the Housing Alliance. Nonetheless, we have great concerns about both these bills and oppose them, although both bills do have some provisions that we can support. Turning first to Senate Bill 186. As you've heard already, the topics of industrial lands and UGBs are precisely the issues that the Oregon Task Force on Land Use Planning should and is addressing. To alter a major component of the state's land use program, urban growth boundaries, now, is premature and would impede the task force's work. Senate Bill 186 creates obligations for local governments, in particular cities, to plan for and provide public facilities to lands that are designated as industrial reserves once they're brought inside the UGB. Until the financial implications of Measure 37 on local governments are known, creating additional major financial obligations for local governments right now is unwise. The bill authorizes LCDC to encourage cities to expand their UGBs to include industrial reserves and requires them to provide services to those lands regardless of whether there's a need for additional industrial lands inside a UGB. This undermines a major tenet of UGBs, that they are based on a need for urban land. Under current law, if there is a need for additional industrial land, a UGB can expand. This bill is unnecessary. It also diverts attention from the real need, that is to invest in infrastructure to make those lands that are already designated as industrial available for development. It's unfair to current owners of industrial lands inside existing UGBs to direct those scarce resources to providing services to new areas. The lands that would be accelerated for urbanization under this bill will be farm and forest lands. These are lands that are already in production for another industrial use, agriculture and forestry. There are two provisions of this bill, 186, that 1000 Friends does support and would support seeing going forward in some form. That's the requirement that cities designate prime industrial lands inside urban growth boundaries and that those lands are protected from conversion to other non-industrial uses. However, based on our service on various Goal 9-related task forces, these two items alone will be very difficult to achieve. There's been resistance to just these two simple items in the past. Turning to Senate Bill 187, do you want me to just jump right into it?
In about 60 seconds, if you could.
Sure.
Right now.
Okay. And when you said in 60 seconds, I thought you meant wait.
No, I mean from the beginning of the time you start talking to the time you end talking.
We oppose Senate Bill 187 because affordable housing should be available to all who need it in every neighborhood. This bill includes some excellent tools to designate and preserve lands for affordable housing, but they should not be limited to the edge of urban growth boundaries. The edge of a UGB is usually not a sensible area for targeting affordable housing. It tends to be at some distance from transit, social service agencies, neighborhood retail, healthcare, and other services that those needing affordable housing require. Locating affordable housing on land simply because it is cheap does not, in my opinion, serve that population well, nor make for a well-rounded community. Current law requires every larger city in the state, those over 25,000 and metro, to take into account the need for affordable housing when expanding their urban growth boundaries. Therefore, this bill is not needed to achieve this purpose. What is needed are methods to ensure that the land designated for affordable housing stays affordable for the long term. Those will likely require tools in addition to land use tools. The bill also provides several loopholes to achieving its stated objectives. For example, the UGB expansions allowed under this bill can also include land for non-affordable housing as long as some as yet unspecified percentage of the land is available for affordable housing. That could mean, for example, that 99% of the land brought into the UGB is for non-affordable housing, while only 1% is for affordable. The bill also allows local governments to rezone land set aside for affordable housing under, as yet, undefined exceptional circumstances. To truly provide a tool that can make affordable housing available in every community and neighborhood, we recommend the legislature remove the current prohibition on inclusionary housing in ORS 197309. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Holt?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Holt, and I would like to speak in opposition to Bill 186. I'm here as a private citizen, and I believe I represent the views of private citizens, though unfortunately very few are aware of this bill, and so very few are present here today. It seems to me that in every session of the legislature, we have one or two land use bills sponsored by speculators and developers. Under the guise of claiming a shortage of developable land, these bills attempt to bypass the land use process for benefit of the sponsors. 2 years ago, it was House Bill 2956 and House Bill 2963. But fortunately, following public testimony, neither was passed out of committee. It seems to me that Senate Bill 186 is yet another such attempt and comes at a time when the whole land use process is under review. And much time and effort is being put into the big look exercise, as others have mentioned here. In the northern Willamette Valley, we already have a perfectly satisfactory process for dealing with the creation of industrial land, the urban growth boundaries, as reviewed regularly and administered by the Metro Council in the Portland area and city councils elsewhere. If I recall correctly, about 4,500 acres of land in the metro area was brought in for development during the last review. Many cities in the area have a good inventory of developable industrial land, some even with infrastructure already supplied. And what about the brownfield sites within current urban growth boundaries? It seems to me that redevelopment of these could be an additional source. So why have the sponsors of this bill not given us any assessment of how much industrial land is currently available and where before we rush into converting prime agricultural land? Until we have a fix on what is currently available, how can we determine what is the right way forward? Besides, the Metro UGB discussions are about to get underway for a decision in 2008, and the Big Look recommendations will probably be ready not long after that. Why would we want to preempt these well-established processes at this time? This is the wrong time to be pushing yet another effort to convert prime agricultural land outside the UGBs and reward speculators. We need to see the recommendations of the Big Look first, and in the meantime, let's get someone to gather some real data on what is currently available so that we can make intelligent and informed decisions. There is certainly no emergency here, in my opinion, so we can take our time, the time needed to ensure that we do only what is justified. Mr. Chairman, this bill is premature, and I urge you and the committee members, on behalf of citizens of Oregon, to reject it at this time. And I thank you for listening to my testimony.
Mr. Holt, thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time to come down here and share your views with us. Ms. McCurdy, the same.
Thank you.
C.K. Patterson, Harlan Levy. Mm-hmm. Folks, we're not doing a bad job of staying to the 3 minutes or so, but if everybody stays to the 3 minutes, then we will be done by 4:30, where the next hearing will promptly begin. So, Mr. Patterson, would you like to begin?
I would, Mr. Chairman. Honorable members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be heard. I'm a resident of Wilsonville, Oregon, here as a citizen. Your decision on SB 186 could last forever in my neighborhood in a powerfully negative way. The text reads much like a couple of bills that were hurried into the last session in the House after Metro listened to nearly 1,000 of us gathered in Wilsonville to oppose the taking of prime farmland into the UGB for industrial development. Not because we don't want more industry in our city. The city approved something like 800 acres of new industrial land and is today serving or planning to serve that land with needed roads and facilities. My neighbors and local government are not anti-industry, certainly not anti-growth or anti-business. We're pro-Oregon, pro-agriculture, pro-farmland. SB 186, as I read it, and as proposed, might better be called the Industrial Developers and Farmland Speculators Act of 2007. What they want is cheap farmland to develop, avoiding the costs of existing developed land. But what happened to the original, urgently needed 25 shovel-ready sites identified last time around? As near as I can find, perhaps two of them have been seized on for that opportunity. Metro, the agency you folks created for planning in the Portland region, identified a 20-year supply of industrial land inside the urban growth boundary, and they'll do so again soon. Metro recently surveyed the opinion of people in the region to help guide a new look. Over three-quarters of those people, 76%, said that farm and forest land should be preserved because of the contribution they make to our economy, rather than allowing business development on farm and forest land to accommodate other new urban economic business expansion. I refer you to the New Look section of the Metro website for the full study. Do the surveyed citizens know what they're talking about? Of course they do. In only two counties, Marion and Clackamas, agriculture sales last year may have passed $1 billion. 3 years ago, they exceeded $900 million. And these are dollars that turn in our communities and in our state over and over again, while leaving unharmed the rich land resources that produce them. Agriculture is one of the most important traded sectors in our state economy. Please, if you must craft this measure, craft it carefully. Leave Metro and the North Willamette Valley out of it. In my city alone, Wilsonville, we already have a hot, hustling, well-planned industrial sector that needs no further incentives from LCDC. The farmland that borders our community is the best in the world, an irreplaceable asset. I hope you'll keep in mind that it is not simply excess land idly awaiting its turn under the speculator's shovel. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Mr. Levy?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I am Harlan Levy, here representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. We support the concepts behind both Senate Bill 186 and 187. I want to commend the department and the governor's office for bringing these bills forward. I'll be very brief. I just wanted to state that, you know, all the things in these bills will be voluntary. You're hearing a lot of stories and testimony here about cities having to do things, and our understanding of the intention behind these bills, and the words may not be there yet, but the intention is that these will be voluntary programs for the cities to use to create industrial reserves in one bill and create affordable housing in the other bill. So again, voluntary is key, voluntary incentives, and we support those concepts. Basically, we just want to make sure that these bills do get a good hearing, and that you understand that you know, these nothing would be prescribed by this legislation, and that that is why we support both concepts. Thank you for this opportunity.
Very good, thank you, committee. No, thank you both. Then, Randy Tucker and Linda Ludwig.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Randy Tucker, Legislative Affairs Manager for Metro. I have lots of notes, most of which I'm not going to deliver. Most everything has been said here today, it seems like. I'll just relate a brief story. I started this job with Metro in March of 2004. In April of 2004, Metro began the process of trying to add industrial land to the urban growth boundary. It took a couple of months. By the end of that time, I was wondering if I really wanted to work there anymore. Adding industrial land to the UGB is really a painful process at this point in time in the Metro area. as much as the council is committed to providing adequate land for economic development, the low-hanging fruit is gone. I was comforted on Senate Bill 186 to hear the director of DLCD, Mr. Shetterly, note that even though there's language in the bill that confuses this matter, it's intended to be entirely voluntary. I think rather than referring to the bill itself, I think I'd like to just mention a couple of things. The biggest concern that we have in the metro region, the council has, and I think this is shared throughout the region, as is indicated by the adoption of a regional legislative agenda, actually, for the first time, is that it's not as much a matter of land as it's a matter of the ability to get the land developed once it's in the urban growth boundary. We're finding that the biggest problem is financing. And the council has brought in 20,000 acres into the urban growth boundary, including 2,000 or 3,000 for industrial land, virtually none of which is developing right now because of the lack of funds. So I'd be glad to provide more information if we're proceeding with a conversation about industrial reserves, et cetera, as to the location and status of industrial land in the Portland metro area as time goes on. The other thing I'd like to mention before moving on to the other bill, which I didn't sign up for, if I may just make a brief comment on, Mr. Chair, is that the region will be bringing forth a piece of legislation that's still in legislative council having to do with urban reserves and rural reserves, and to the extent that we want to have a conversation about how land at the edge of the urban growth boundary is handled, we'd be interested in folding that bill into that conversation. But it's not; there's no draft yet. So, the as far as Senate Bill 187 is concerned, I'd just like to say a couple of things very briefly. The Metro Council certainly applauds the focus on affordable housing, but questions whether affordable housing is best provided through land or through financial mechanisms. Metro is a member of the Housing Alliance, which, as you know, has come forward this session with a fairly ambitious funding agenda, which the council supports. And finally, as many other people have said, we have a concern about expanding urban growth boundaries in the absence of a demonstration of need for land. So I'll just leave it at that and be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Linda Ludwig, League of Oregon Cities. We do applaud, as Mr. Tucker said, the merits of the bill. Certainly industrial reserves and affordable housing are very meritorious issues for the state of Oregon. However, we do have some concerns. There are really and truly for us three. The timing seems unseemly with the investment that the legislature has done with the Senate Bill 82 Big Look Committee. Both of these bills essentially blow out two of the pillars of the land use planning system, the 20-year land supply, and the land priority statute, 197-298. Again, with the ongoing big look process, it seems a little bit early in the game to look at these very important issues. The bills both provide a fast track to expand the UGB for the purposes of affordable housing and for industrial reserves. And both bills also require that services be provided in 1 year. 1 year. Let me tell you what you've heard from me before and some of the other stakeholders in this process. The biggest issue facing cities today is not the land needed, it's the dollars to provide the infrastructure. I would like to repeat that 10 times on the record if I could. That is our biggest concern.
We got it up one.
Lastly, you heard some concerns with the Goldine rulemaking that dealt with economic development and industrial lands. It was phase one of industrial lands. There were costs associated to cities and counties for that rulemaking, which just became effective January 1st of 2007. The costs have not been yet covered in the governor's budget. Cities and counties are very concerned about that. And we haven't had the time to see yet the results of that phase one rulemaking. We think it's a bit early to go into phase two. Okay. Thank you.
Good. Thank you both very much. Charlotte Lehan and Jeff Stone. And just let me do a time check with folks as they're coming up. I have left Bob Gillespie, Don Miner, Pat Schwach, and Jenna Swearingen afterwards. Is there anybody else that would like to testify other than what I just said? One gentleman here. Okay. Ms. Lehan, you may begin. Whenever you're ready, just state your name on the record and launch right in.
Chair, my name is Charlotte Lehan. I am the mayor of the city of Wilsonville. And thank you for the opportunity today. I have written testimony there, but I'm not going to read it and because much of it has already been said. Thank I just you. Want to hit a couple of high points. One is that, indeed, we are very supportive of industrial lands. And in fact, a third of the city of Wilsonville is currently zoned industrial. But I know we are viewed as industrial growth, I guess, because the city of Wilsonville has been referred to as the ones that have their finger in the dike in terms of the North Willamette Valley. We have strongly opposed going south of the Willamette with industrial development on prime ag land, and we have tried to cooperate as much as we could with adding industrial land on exception land in appropriate areas. This is a piece of legislation in search of a problem. Certainly it exacerbates the problems of figuring out the Big Look and the New Look and the Measure 37 things. But from the city's side, the acres that have come in, 4,000, 4,500 that came in 2004 and the 18,000 that came in the metro area in 2002, virtually none of it has been developed, and that's because it has no infrastructure. The main problem with this is that it has no protections for prime agriculture, and that alone exacerbates speculation. And there's wrong thinking here that land outside the UGB is cheap. It is not cheap. And this is true for 186 and 187. It is only cheap if it's farmed, if it's priced for ag. If it's priced thinking it's coming into the urban growth boundary, which most of that land that's adjacent to the urban growth boundary thinks it is, it's almost as high a price as that inside. I mean, check it out. It's expensive. They're speculating the same as everybody else that this land is about to come in. It is not cheap, and it is some of the most expensive to serve with infrastructure. so we're kind of going down the wrong road of that. I also wanted to refute the part that says that cities, this is all optional or something. It does have language in here under section 3.2a and 2b that says that the commission can require the local government to designate an urban reserve in several ways that they can require us to do that. So I'm not comfortable that it's entirely optional, and the notion that you could serve it in a year's time, it could be required to service industrial land in a year's time, is it's taken us 10 years to get Villebois underway because of the infrastructure challenges. This is not easy. And expediting, saying that you will expedite or provide incentives to local government in the way of bringing it in faster, we don't need that. We already have thousands of acres inside that we can't serve now because we can't get infrastructure to it. And I'll just say a couple things I wasn't going to say. I didn't turn in any testimony on 187. But, again, Wilsonville certainly is on the bleeding edge of affordable housing and certainly in the mobile home arena. we considered going out to the edge. We even considered buying land out on the edge. But, again, it was almost as expensive as buying it inside, and it would be too far out for the fragile population that we were trying to serve. They wouldn't be able to walk to the store or the post office, and it would be too difficult to put them there, and still expensive. And once we ran the infrastructure all the way out there, more expensive than taking something already inside. So again, it is not cheap. It's not a cheap solution, and it's just wrong thinking to think that it is. And
good
I'll
mayor.
Stop there.
Mayor, thank you very much. Mr. Stone?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jeff Stone, Director of Government Relations for the Oregon Association of Nurseries. We reside in the mayor's city, actually. I'm here to testify on Senate Bill 186 and 187. These measures, as written, cause the nursery industry great concern for a number of reasons. First, while we have issues about how the state utilizes hierarchy of lands and its urban growth boundary expansions in the absence of a 20-year land supply for agricultural lands, these bills provide an expedited or supersiding processes for industrial and affordable housing reserves. The state already mandates a 20-year land supply for housing and plays significant weight towards creating employment lands. We are not advocating for repealing the state's planning goals. Rather, we feel that acknowledgement of agriculture as an industry is needed. Second, as a former chief of staff to the Metro Council, the regional government in Portland, you already heard from Randy earlier today, I've seen both sides of the growth debate. The OAN believes that land use planning must embrace a new view of agriculture and embrace its economic impact on the state. The nursery industry in particular is affected by decisions of growth since we bridge the urban and rural divide. Our top producing counties are Marion, Clackamas, Washington, Yamhill, and Multnomah. It is our opinion that the law, as it stands, does not currently protect against the eventual march of urbanizing agricultural land. Don Schellenberg gave you a lot of statistics, which I will not repeat, but concepts and laws that erode protections of farmland is not a direction that our industry would endorse. Lastly, we acknowledge the pressures to grow and sustain economic and housing choices. However, it's important to note that if you supersite industrial lands and affordable housing on nursery land, you are adversely affecting the long-term viability of agriculture in the Willamette Valley. Agriculture is soil-dependent. Industrial uses are not. We have spoken with the LCDC staff and believe that a work group is in order. We would welcome being an active and positive partner in this work group and would advocate, Mr. Chair, that you call for one. Happy to answer any questions.
Good. Thank you. Mr. Stone, Mayor, we appreciate your presence here very much. Thanks to both of you. Don Miner and Pat Schwach.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Don Miner. I'm here on behalf of Oregon Manufactured Housing Association to speak in support of Senate Bill 187. Before I begin, though, I'd like to thank the governor and the Director Shetterly and the chair of LCDC for allowing this bill to come forward. It's our understanding that all the goals are equal. Goal one may be first, but it doesn't have any priority over goals 3, 4, or 10. We support the agricultural goal. It's an important goal, but so is Goal 10 that requires that comprehensive plans accommodate the housing needs of Oregonians and that a variety of housing types, tenures, and densities be provided. The legislature in the 1980s, I think when Mr. Repine was in the legislature, actually, designated manufactured homes located in parks as specifically needed, and consequently, comprehensive plans are required to provide for them. Okay, if you look around at what's going on in the state, there aren't any parks being built that I can think of anywhere in the Willamette Valley. In fact, you see quite the contrary. Parks are being closed in large numbers. I spoke to Diane Belts today. She's Washington County, helps collect taxes up there. She says that probably in the last 2 years they've lost at least 14 parks in Washington County, that they've dropped from about maybe 2,000 to 2,500 spaces have all been lost in Washington County. Now, these weren't the old trailer parks that you would expect to be converted, but we're seeing throughout the valley and in central Oregon as well, probably in southern Oregon, are newer parks. Parks built in the last 6, 8, 10 years being closed, and the folks living there being forced to move their homes. Now, this is a disaster when you invest all this money to put the home into the park, and now it has to be moved. The greater disaster is going to come about if there's no place to move it to. There are several bills that are being introduced this session. There are several that came out today in the 2600 series that begin to provide financial resources to relocate these homes. Yet there's no place to move them to. Just don't see how it'll work. The consumer will wind up losing their home, losing the equity in their home, and still, in many, many cases, having a debt due to a lender that financed that home. With that, I'll conclude my remarks and urge your support of this measure.
Very good. Thank you. Ms. Schwach?
Yes, for the record, my name is Pat Schwach. I'm Executive Director for Manufactured Homeowners of Oregon. My thrust is probably different than a lot of the others in that I spent a good share of last summer going to these park closures. They were kind of like funerals. And we need to address what we're going to do about these houses and these parks. I don't know what the answer is. And I'm with Don. We have a lot of legislation coming through that hopefully will settle some of this. Thank you for the opportunity.
May I make one more brief remark? Parks have traditionally been located on the urban fringe, so that seems like this would work out well for them.
Very good. Thanks to both of you. Janice Waringen, Bob Gillespie. Thanks. Yeah, the chair may not be the sharpest pencil in the box, but I picked up on that one all by myself. And just for that, Ms. Swearengin, you can go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jenna Swearengin. I'm with the Oregon Home Builders Association. I just submitted written testimony from Mr. Chandler, also with the Home Builders Association. Unfortunately, he isn't able to attend today. He's with our members for the week, and so my comments will be brief because I am speaking on his behalf. We are in support of this bill. We are very supportive of this concept, specifically, Senate Bill 187. We do think it needs a little bit of work, and we would recommend that possibly with the direction of this committee that we would be able to be part of a work group. And unfortunately, I am not asking that I'm part of that, but Mr. Chandler is, if that is to happen. I would be happy to take any questions that you have at this time.
Nope. Thanks very much.
Chair, I think the work group would prefer her over Mr. Chandler.
Chair Vakian, and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Gillespie. I'm the administrator of the Housing Division for Oregon Housing Community Services Department, and I'm here to briefly speak in support of Senate Bill 187. As Director Shetterly pointed out, there are many inflationary factors on affordable housing. Land is certainly one of those. What I've heard from our partners around the state, not just in the Willamette Valley, but up and down I-5 and out on the I-84 corridor, three things. Land is very hard to find, first of all. Oftentimes, when you find the land, it's very difficult to develop. And what we're finding is sometimes there's excessive slopes, sometimes you might have wetland issues, or because of the restrictions in site, you're forced to put in structured parking, which again drives the cost of the land up. So, you know, what we believe is that this bill, and I do believe it is voluntary, may allow opportunities for the cities to bring in more land for affordable housing that could add some efficiencies both to the acquisition cost of the land as well as the development cost of the land. And I'd also point out that we have a certain amount of expertise in trying to maintain long-term affordability. We've offered our assistance to DLCD as they look at rules in regards to how to maintain the affordability, and Bob Rendy is certainly acceptable to that. So I, too, if there's a work group, would like to be on that. And that concludes my comments.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. And the gentleman in the front row.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Charles. I'm president of Cascade Policy Institute, a research and educational center based in Portland with an interest in market-oriented solutions to public policy problems. I'm here today neither in favor nor opposed to Senate Bill 187 because I think it's mostly an exercise in deck chair rearrangement. And I'll just briefly outline why I think that's the case and suggest that you might pursue other avenues. For anyone interested in affordable housing, the most important thing, I believe, to assess is that the primary effect of Oregon's land use system, especially the use of gross boundaries and rural downzoning, is to create various real estate cartels. by making buildable land scarce where it would otherwise be plentiful in a state that is almost nothing but land. Land use regulations drive up land prices far above market value, and this is exacerbated by the fact that roughly 60% of Oregon is in public ownership, and so those lands are already off. Basically, taking all of the federal, state, and regional regulations and ownership patterns, the government is to land supply in Oregon what OPEC is to oil supply. And although at least with OPEC, it's very clear what they're trying to do. They're trying to maximize revenue and extort money from the world. The problem with land use regulation in Oregon is that people who support it wrap themselves in the flag of various feel-good phrases like agricultural protection or livability or something, and consistently deny that this cartelization effect causes land prices to rise. But, of course, as Mr. Van Lanningham said about an hour ago very directly, it's difficult to build low-cost housing on high-cost land, and high-cost land is the inevitable, unavoidable result of the cartelization of the economy. There's a big this is made worse by the planning emphasis, which is just an aesthetic emphasis of planners in Oregon for higher-density mixed-use projects, which, if you see, look at the attachments that I have there, clearly the higher density you get, the more mixed-use you get, that's the most expensive type of project to build. High-cost land, high-cost design, not low-cost housing at the end. I think it's counterproductive also to focus on, quote, affordable housing, which is basically a buzz phrase for sort of a subsidized ghetto arrangement. I think most people, the broader public interest would be served by creating, making houses more affordable across the board. And one way to do that is to address the problems with land supply, building design, infrastructure, as well as labor. And all of those factors are artificially high in Oregon. I've attached an excerpt from a Brookings Institution study in which they analyzed 50 largest metropolitan regions in the country and found that the weight of the evidence suggests that places with stricter land use regulations differ systematically from those that are less strict. The evidence is clearest about housing prices, which are higher in strictly regulated places. And if you just go through the attachments in the back, you can see the source of three studies I have, Oregon Housing Cost Study. One of the findings was land-related costs are the most notable rising component of production, and the other studies where I've highlighted for your pleasure if you have time to go through them. It sort of empirically makes the case that I have here. So, in conclusion, you could assign a work group and you could burn up a couple thousand billable hours collectively in that, and that'd be good for the lobbies in the room. But I think that's a diversion. If you actually care about the problem of high-cost housing and the lack of industrial land, you have to address head-on at some point how, as Randy Tucker said, how difficult it is to deal with urban growth boundaries expansions once you actually create the cartel, because the incentive of everyone inside the cartel is to maintain it, not expand it. The people who would like to expand it generally are not represented in the game. They're the young, they're renters, they're poor, or they aren't here yet. And so those are my comments.
Okay. Mr. Charles, thank you. You had a long time to testify. We appreciate you hanging in there. A number of people did bring up the notion of a work group, and the committee is not inclined to appoint a work group. That's not meant as a preclusive comment by me. Certainly anybody out there that heard the issues today wants to get together and try and sort through those. The chair will have an open ear to seeing, to hearing what you come up with. With that, thank you, everybody, for your testimony today. I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bills 186 and 187, and with that, we are adjourned, committee.